Okay, joined in studio by psychologist Alison Keaton and psychoanalyst Ray O'Neill. Good to see you in studio.
Good to see you.
You were in with Catherine, were you, while I was away? Last month. Yes, yes. So this isn't your first time in studio. So
first time to see you.
Yeah.
It's March.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about the psychology of wearing face masks, Alison, before we get to our listeners' questions?
It's just, it's hard. And as you were saying there, you know, it's like losing another sense that you nearly have to listen harder, and you definitely have to work and express yourself more, because even you might be smiling under that mask, it's actually quite hard to tell.
Yes.
So I think we have to work extra hard. It's challenging. We're all going to be wrinklier, aren't we?
Because I would have thought that, you know, that we are drawn to people's eyes. So, and which the eyes aren't covered with a mask, Ray, but the mouth obviously gives, sends out signals as well.
I think one of the things that's interesting with this kind of new situation we find is we're realizing that actually we were picking up our cues in a lot of other ways, because it's a bit like they talk about somebody who becomes blind, how their hearing becomes accentuated. I think our reliance on eyes is becoming stronger because we don't have necessarily the mouth and the smile to look to as much.
Yeah. So you want to let people know that you are smiling behind the mask. So you raise your eyebrows and do all sorts of things. Look at my twinkly eyes, I'm really smiling.
We're smizing.
We're smizing, yeah. Okay, so we said you were coming in, so we've a good bit to get through. So let's start. Hello, Ray, Ray and Ray and Alison. I'm writing to you to get some advice on how to connect more with my husband. We have lost the closeness, fun, intimacy and happiness. We argue over small things and innocent comments can be misconstrued as being critical remarks. He seems to be constantly on his phone and is always messaging his large family or friends on WhatsApp or Snapchat, etc. This drives me insane, or checking emails or news updates is a constant distraction for him too. He is never without his phone. I feel like we've fallen out of love and I'd love to know how to fall back in love or just increase the closeness or spark again. We've two small children too and don't want our unhappiness to affect them. Yeah, so she says there, we've two small children and don't want our unhappiness to affect them. She's saying, I don't. It's not we don't want, because it doesn't sound like she's had this chat yet with her husband, Ray.
I think that's a very good point to pick up on. It's, you know, perhaps they haven't talked about, you know, the nitty-gritty of what's going wrong here. But there clearly is some awareness between the two of them that whatever is going wrong, they don't want it to affect the children. Well, the best way to make sure it doesn't affect the children is to talk about it, because kids are sponges when it comes to silences in a family. They pick up on things because that's what children do. Like what we were saying about the cues, because children aren't so familiar with language and literacy, they pick up on emotional readings so much better in many
body
ways.
Body language,
exactly,
all of that. Yes,
than adults do.
Yeah, yeah. So it's hugely important. We've spoken about this before, Alison, that the phone is going to wreck loads of relationships, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's like there's three on the couch sometimes, isn't there?
Yes.
So I think just bring it up. Sometimes people don't even recognise they're doing it. It is the smoking of our time, really, isn't it? And I don't think people sometimes, maybe he does, but maybe he doesn't. So give him the benefit of the doubt, and talk to him about how it actually makes her feel isolated and alone, and that he's choosing his large group of family and friends. But there could be some intimacy issues there, that he finds it easier just to have a quick text with them rather than actually connecting with her. But the thing that jumped off the page to me was that the comments are often misconstrued. So there is stuff that needs to be talked about. And when, you know, there's issues that haven't been talked about openly, you get into this kind of cycle of negative sentiment override. So basically anything, even innocent, is heard negatively. So that to me is the flag that we have to wave here.
So it could be about, it really is about lack of intimacy and lack of having sex. But
well, talking. I mean, to get to the sex, you actually have to have the intimacy of saying, I miss you. I feel lonely. I don't feel like you love me. You know, those feelings. Yeah. That's the intimacy, the vulnerability piece. That's what I'm feeling from her. But maybe she just has to have that conversation and see where it goes. But you set your intention really, you know, you kind of wrap it up nicely and say, I miss you. I miss us.
But is that thing common enough, isn't it? Where the little things become big things, but it's not really about the little things. It's not about not emptying the dishwasher. It's not about that.
No.
No, it's about the fact that things aren't going well and this is just a symptom of it.
And she recognises she doesn't feel connected. She doesn't feel a sense of love or the fun. That she misses the part of them, perhaps, that was before they had children.
And what about regulations around phone use, Ray? You know, like leave it out of the TV room from 8 o'clock at night or whatever.
But again, it's like, because I always believe that we never stop being the children we were. And the best way to establish regulations with children is to give them a context for why that... So you're going to bed at 9 o'clock because if you stay up till 9:30, you'll be grouchy in the morning and then you'll be... And they go, oh yeah, you're right. Yes. I might do this, but I know you're right. Thinking my old parents, God bless them. But that idea of like, it's not about imposing a law. It's just saying, look, when you're in your phone, I miss you. You're not there for me. Yeah. And I just, it's getting increasingly lonely.
Yeah.
And so when Alison is talking, she's right about having that conversation. The best way to start impossible conversations or difficult conversations is to just say, this is an impossible, I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes if you appear to be the one who has the answers, you can be resented for it.
Yeah.
Whereas going with the question.
So it's showing a vulnerability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I hope that works out and you're not on your own. I'd say, unfortunately, it's a story that's been echoed around the country.
The gorgeous thing in it, which is the statement that I would really invite her to either say or show back to her partner, is, I feel like we've fallen out of love and I'd love to know how to fall back in love.
Yeah.
We need hope.
Mm.
It's like all this COVID thing.
Yeah.
We need hope.
Yeah, yeah. Hello, I'm a female in my early 20s who's in a long-term relationship that I hope will be my lifelong relationship. My query may be slightly different to most. I worry I rely too heavily on my boyfriend for emotional support and understanding. I'm an independent, hard-working, completely self-sufficient woman in practical terms. When it comes to dealing with my emotions, however, I feel I expect too much empathy and understanding from him. I can see he finds my expectations difficult to meet. I would love some advice on how to curtail my demands on him and not expect so much. I'm working in healthcare and I like to think that I'm a compassionate person in tune with people's emotions. He works in business and has never had to go through any emotional hardship. Perhaps this is where our mismatch in expectations stems from. Regard, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, what I'm hearing here is, like Ray was saying earlier, the child. So what emotional needs weren't met as a child? And she's looking for kind of this perhaps excessive reassurance from her partner, or maybe some of it's warranted. You know, it's figuring out the middle ground with that. The fact that she's aware that she's looking for this and why does she need this extra reassurance? You know, what vulnerability is that bringing up for her? Is she feeling worried that he's going to, you know, leave her or abandon her? What issue? It's actually not him. I think it is her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a blaming way. It's actually great that she can identify the feeling in this. So I would just get her to kind of sit with what's actually going on here and what is she hoping that he will meet in her that perhaps she needs to meet in herself. Well, not perhaps. She does need to meet it in herself first.
I agree absolutely with what Alison said. I will also add, because particularly again in the year that we're having, people working in healthcare, it's been exhausting.
Yes. Yeah.
It has been a particularly demanding time for students, for nurses, for frontline workers. So it's understandable when so much of your work life goes towards compassion and care for others, that reservoir, the give and take, you probably do feel you need a little bit more.
And there's a fear there as well that she's going to turn him off her, you know, and that thing, you know, it's derogatory, isn't it? Needy, that word,
yeah.
You know, she's describing herself there without using the word as. But she's, you know, fearful that she's needy.
It's great that she recognises it, and as Ray is saying, you know, there's so much compassion fatigue and actual physical, emotional burnout, and we're only heading into more of it within the healthcare system, that she feels depleted. So the question is, how can she meet these emotional and physical needs within herself? I mean, we're looking into a lot of people with post-traumatic stress coming down the line, or if they don't already have it. But as you said, let's move away from the sense of that needy thing, because I don't think, I know what you're saying and you're right, but it will make her feel shameful that she feels this way. There are real needs here.
No, I totally know
what you mean.
No, and I think that in a relationship that's going to work, because she does say at the outset that I hope this will be a lifelong relationship, that there needs to be this sort of, cohabiting of needs. So like at one stage, somebody is going to be needy and the other person has to absorb that.
But you're right, Ray, because the more she pursues him, the more he will pull away.
Yes.
And then it proves to her, oh gosh, I actually was too needy.
Self-fulfilling.
It becomes self-fulfilling prophecy.
If I may speak up for the Irish man here, not every Irish man will pull away from that.
Okay.
I know that is the challenge. And it's, again, we're taking her anxiety and her fear, which is very real for her. But to trust someone, to be needy with someone, is such a privilege.
Yes. Mm.
And if someone, if her partner values that, because in what she said, he hasn't complained, maybe he is honoured and moved by the privilege that he's helping a frontline worker, that he's being her frontline on a domestic front. Mm. Because I absolutely, there's such stigma around neediness. And it took me decades to enjoy and let, first of all, myself need and then rely on somebody else with those needs.
Yes, yeah. Yeah,
there's
a
privilege in that. So don't be ashamed of
it. Okay. Mm. And it's brilliant that you've actually written it down on paper. So that's a huge start, and good luck with that. Okay. Now, Ray and Alison, my partner and I rarely have sex. We love each other very much, both find each other very attractive, but we have entered into a vicious cycle where I feel like I've been rejected by him a lot, and rightly or wrongly took it personally, although he says he just has a lower sex drive than me. It has shook my sexual confidence big time, especially after coming out of a long, emotionally abusive relationship not long before we got together. Therefore, I don't initiate anymore, as I'm crippled by my fear of further rejection. In turn, I know by stuff he says, he employs, I don't want him anymore. When he does rarely become flirtatious, it's almost like I freeze internally and brush it off outwardly, as I have myself so locked in this mindset of feeling not wanted. Carrying around these feelings and not talking about them is really taking a toll on my mental health, and I can tell on his too. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I find it painfully difficult to bring up and have an open conversation about it, as I suppose I think I sound totally pathetic. Any tips for approaching this issue with my partner? Thanks. Who wants to take that?
I think there's so much to that. And but again, this is what it is to have sex in a long-term relationship. And as I always say, a long-term relationship is anything over 12 months. We're programmed, we're not educated around sex in Ireland or in the world. We're programmed for sex to be this kind of activity, sport, thrill. We're not educated that sex is something intimate, something beautiful, and something that actually is grounded in awkwardness. Unfortunately, pornography doesn't communicate awkwardness, but all of us in relationships know that body parts go to the wrong places and elbows hit faces and people fall out of the bed, even when you're not trying that hard. It's called being human. And again, it's a bit like with the earlier person, not to be ashamed of the awkwardness, but to actually bring it there. So the only way to kind of approach this conversation is just to kind of go, I'm scared about having this conversation, but you're too important. And our sexuality is too important to not talk.
Yeah. And they find each other very attractive.
Yeah. Well, you see, I don't think it's about this couple. I think it's like one step back, and we go back to
her former relationship.
The emotionally abusive relationship that she had not long before. So she hasn't healed.
Yeah.
And how could she? And when she freezes, what I'm hearing is trauma there. And these are very strong words. She feels rejected. She freezes, like she's having very strong physiological responses. And in one way, she wants the sex. But in another way, when he actually comes towards her, she's like, she's frozen. So, I mean, it's really important that she addresses what it actually meant to her to be in that emotionally abusive relationship, how it affected her, and to work through that therapeutically so that she can let that go. Because I don't think that is what the problem is in this relationship. But, bringing it.
She does say it has shook my sexual confidence big time. But she could be mistaking, you know, what's going on for a confidence
because she's feeling rejected by him. Then she's taking it very personally. Like, these are very strong words, but I feel that they are possibly older wounds from an emotionally abusive relationship. Yeah. Like, that has a massive impact on a person.
So what's your advice to her then?
I would talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I really would, because these are issues that they won't magically go away. And these people love each other and they can work through this. But I think it's coming from the first relationship.
Okay.
I think one of the things, sorry, Ray, again, is that sexuality and sex doesn't have to be like, when you'll often hear couples, and I mea culpa as well, when you go, oh, I just don't have the time, I'm so knackered. It doesn't have to be a 9-hour marathon session. It can just be a 5-minute snuggle.
Yeah.
It can just be kissing for 2 minutes. Like, there's lots of things you can do. Mm. And so rather than putting the demand or pressure on him or feeling it on yourself, just again saying, look, if you're up for it, could I get a hug tonight? Yeah. Or in bed?
But the longer you leave it, the less likely it's to happen.
Absolutely. The dry rot sets in.
I wish you didn't use that.
But I like Ray's idea. Like, you can build up the oxytocin. You can build up the love hormone by simple stuff. Start with what's missing. Are you giving each other a kiss in the morning and when you leave? You know, are you giving each other a hug? Are you actually holding each other's hand at some stage? The intimacy has to start somewhere.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
Okay. I really hope that works out, because it sounds like you have the foundation of a lovely relationship. Ray O'Neill, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alison Keaton, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon. Mind yourselves.
Thanks, Ray. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.